Welcome to this online interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our very special guest of honor today is Mr. Andrew Hecker. He is the Deputy Director at the Port of Miami in the US. And first and foremost, Andrew, very welcome to this interview.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Great to have you here. I always do the same style with my interviewees. I allow them a chance to elaborate for our viewers a little bit about how they ended up in the chair where they are sitting in. So, Andrew, how come you ended up in shipping and in the Port of Miami, which with this kind of position?
Yeah, it was a bit of a circuitous route to get there. So going back to my early days, I graduated with a degree in accounting.
Oh.
I went to work at one of the big eight accounting firms in the U.S., Ernst & Whinney, and they went through a merger with Arthur Young. They became Ernst & Young. I became a CFO of our consulting groups, and one of the consulting groups before the term supply chain was coined was the transportation practice.
Okay.
And with my financial skills and looking at the balance sheet and things like inventory carrying costs, you know, more than just transportation costs, I started working more and more with that practice. And then I actually transferred out of my CFO role and became a consultant in the supply chain practice.
Okay.
I did that. I became a director of one of our supply chain consulting regions. And I left in about 2000 and went to a startup firm in Boulder, Colorado that was doing supply chain consulting when, you know, e-commerce and B2B was becoming more and more popular.
Okay.
I left that after a few years, went back to trying to work a little bit more in a localized environment, spent some time with my family.
Okay.
And I went to work for an engineering firm that focused on ports and harbors, which was Moffitt and Nickel. And so amongst other things, I became the master planner and the program manager in this consulting role for the Virginia Port Authority. And so I already knew quite a bit about supply chains, had designed and re-engineered supply chains. And so that kind of focused that in on the ports and harbor space. During the course of that, I had an opportunity to come down here and do a consulting engagement in 2013 with Port Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And I just never left. They asked me to stay. I wanted to stay. I moved my family down here. I started as the chief of strategy and financial performance, and then just kind of worked up from there, assistant director of finance, managing director, and now deputy director.
Wow, that's you have a distinguished career there, Andrew, I must say. And well, to be perfectly honest, from where I'm sitting, and you mentioned Miami, and you never left, I can imagine it. We always hear about the good weather in your location. So
it's a good weather. It's got a very vibrant culture down here. There's a lot of great things going on.
Definitely. And many of our viewers, as you may know, they are, let's say, logistics or shipping people, even ship owners. And I think for most people in shipping, they don't really, if they don't know Miami as such, they think that Miami is only a cruise port. But actually, what can you tell us from a cargo perspective? I mean, you have quite a sizable cargo operation, both containers and warehousing and stuff.
We do, and sometimes it is hard to get the markets to understand our position in cargo because we're the cruise capital of the world.
Yeah.
Year after year, we handle more cruise business and more cruise passengers than any other port in the world. And that does have a tendency for our brand, it does have a tendency to overshadow cargo a bit.
Mm.
Having said that, we are the 10th largest cargo port in the United States.
Okay.
We're the largest cargo port in Florida.
Okay.
We have a very diverse mix of business. It's all containerized trade. We don't handle bulk or project cargo.
All right.
But we handle more Asian cargo than any other port in Florida. We're on par with one other port in terms of our position in Europe and the Med.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the largest port for handling cargo between the Caribbean and Latin America. In addition to being the 10th largest port in the U.S. and the largest port in Florida, South Florida, Miami, Broward County, Fort Lauderdale has been experiencing population growth faster than any other region in the U.S., which increases consumption and the need for trade. Some of that is well known when during the pandemic, there were some migrations from California and New York and places like that. But it's also been the number one location for the last couple of years in terms of new businesses and business startup. So again, it just continues to increase the demand for international trade, the volumes we handle, and we spend a lot of time investing in infrastructure to enhance our supply chain.
I do understand. In Miami, I've read up on your port a little bit here, both online and listened in with a few people that I know, and it seems to me that as a transshipment hub for the Caribbean, for Latin America, you have an ideal position. I mean, you must be basically second to none for transshipment into that region. From a trade perspective, I guess.
Yeah, we certainly do. And while we handle all of the largest carriers, ship lines, the better known names, the MSC, CMA, CGMs, Maersk's, Zim, the list goes on and on. We also have a carrier here, Seaboard Marine.
Oh, yeah.
As known across the world, but just such a strong player in Latin America, in the Caribbean. They do about 80% of their total business out of Port Miami.
Wow.
And they also use Kingston, Jamaica as a hub. So we do see that transshipment. If you think about, if you ever take a vacation in the Caribbean and you're eating a steak that was grown in the Midwest of the United States or what have you, it more than likely shipped through Port Miami before it got to your table.
I could imagine. I was a little bit afraid before I came into this interview whether I'd had to speak Spanish to you, but I do understand that English is the native language still.
in most locations, although sometimes it can be difficult ordering a burger from McDonald's, but... I unfortunately, I'm a transplant. I've been trying to take immersion classes because it is something that is just an important part of the culture. But not a Spanish speaker.
No, I understand. Not yet. Yeah, Andrew. One question: warehousing facilities. Let's say I'm a major customer and I'd like to use the Port of Miami, store some stuff for a while until I have sold it or until I know where to export it to. You have storage facilities and plenty of it, don't you?
We do, and that's also been something we're very proud of. While in some cases we're just a facilitator for. The private side of the market that generates warehousing. If you were to look at Miami 8, 10, 12, 15 years ago, while again, we handle Asian cargo and a lot of, you know, the general trade lanes that folks are used to in the shipping world, you saw a lot of import-export business and a lot of what you'd call, you know, the smaller 20, 25,000, 40,000 square foot warehouses, really in kind of an urbanized area. But since that period of time, again, over the last 8 or 10 years, along the major interstates, you see all the big players come in with, you know, the larger, you know, 100,000 plus tilt up construction, you know, the Prologis and the Kuehne+Nagels and those folks, Interport. You continue to see more and more of that big box warehousing that maybe was more prevalent in like a Savannah or out in the Inland Empire near LA and Long Beach. We're continuing to see more and more of that pop up. And yeah, everyone's getting pressure on the vacancy rates, but we continue to see a lot of new build and we continue to have capacity in the Miami market.
Okay, so you grow in that sector as well. Just to understand the situation in the U.S. regarding ports, that means there's a free competition, isn't there? I mean, you compete with other ports on, or do you have any tariffs that you must stick to, or are you free to do as you please?
We have operating agreements, but outside of that, we are free to compete, and we're in an open marketplace. And so while price is one part of the equation, a lot of our focus is providing infrastructure that creates both capacity and creates an efficient supply chain. As a matter of fact, you know, this interview is quite timely. We're getting ready to break ground. We're an island port. We're in an urban location, so we're very close to downtown Miami.
Right.
We have a very short channel to get to and from the ocean, and we're dredged at 5052. Okay. So superposed Panamax vessels are no problem.
Okay.
We have capacity limitations being an island. We're getting ready to break ground on a 200-acre inland port.
Wow.
That's on the western end of the county. Think of it as like two bookends, our port, our deep water port, and an inland port bookending the urban regions. And the inland port we're going to be constructing is at the entranceway to move up through the state of Florida, out to the Atlanta market and beyond.
Okay, that's really wonderful news. I mean, it's very impressive. You know, another thing that came to my mind, there's a lot of talk about green nowadays. It's like, I wouldn't call it the new religion, but, you know, everyone talks about green these days. And that also means moving transportation from truck to rail, stuff like that. Do you have good rail connections just to be in the green mood with Miami Port?
We do, and I'll expand on green that goes way beyond the rail. So 2015, we rehabilitated our on-dock rail.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the on-dock rail facility had become damaged in a hurricane maybe 10 years prior, 15 years prior.
Right.
We rehabilitated it. But in the meantime, and in partnering with the federal government, we've received a grant. We are now expanding it. We're adding three tracks.
Okay.
And we're moving from top pick and reach stacker operations that require wide aisles and consume capacity in the rail yard for additional tracks. We're going to go to wide span gantries over the tracks.
Okay.
And it's going to increase our capacity by about 80%, almost 100%.
Wow.
Because we're shifting as we're seeing this demand in cargo increase, and some of it's coming from near shoring and trade with the Western Hemisphere increasing. Again, although we do more business with Asia than anybody else, since we've had to rehabilitate, at the same time that we're rehabilitating, we're decarbonizing at the same time. So our gantry cranes have been electric for decades, but our container handling equipment, we're moving to electric RTGs.
Okay.
Our rail partner already has LNG locomotives, but we're looking at battery powered or catenary systems so that at least to the inland port, we can move electrical.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our drayage partners we're working with to try to build out over the road electric truck fleets.
Okay.
We have a population in South Florida of about 18 million people within a 200-mile radius.
Yeah.
And so the ability to reach that size of a population with an electric truck and do a round trip without having to stop and recharge is much greater than when you're in some of the less densely populated areas, where to reach a population of 18 million, you might have to drive 1,200 miles in the middle of the country, for example.
Yeah.
We can get there in 3 hours.
Oh, that's, I mean, it seems to me that you have all the prerequisite for being successful in not only now, but also in the future, having everything in place for the new, let's say, the green drive, and you're already in there.
So. We do, and part of that is driven by the fact that as the demand has been changing and increasing, and we've been staying on top of, I have a wonderful team, very smart people, and we stay on top of market shifts. We do the green infrastructure at the same time that we're rehabilitating. You know, for example, one of our greatest opportunities right now is Mexico has become the number one trading partner with the U.S. recently.
Yeah.
And that land border crossing between Mexico and Arizona and Texas has become highly congested.
Right.
In addition, as Mexico has been increasing, Most of their new manufacturing is coming up to in the south and east of Mexico City. Mm-hmm. So we've been working with the ports in Veracruz and Tuxpan and Altamira initially to become a relief valve where you can't get across the border and your cargo is coming to the southeast United States anyway, is to shift that to all water. And yeah. So, you know, that's an opportunity that requires us to build more capacity. And if we're building capacity, you know, we're just laser focused on making it green.
Okay, that's really, yeah, I heard a couple of other places around the world through my interviews that they're talking green corridors for shipping and stuff yeah. like that. I mean, for you to remove part of the congested U.S. border trade over to all water from Mexico to Miami sounds really like a smart move. And that means you are building on partnerships with the Mexican ports as we speak, right?
The Mexican ports and even customers. We were in Mexico about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
We met with a company. They were very interested. They wanted to try a pilot. They're like, let's identify some shipments and let's try this all water.
Okay.
They had some issues in Mexico. In fact, they had to shut down some of the rail services because of the problems at the border. Mm-hmm. We got a call back and said, we don't need to do a pilot anymore. We have an emergency. If we can't move product, we're going to have to shut our factory down. So we got them in touch with our shipping partners and what have you, and they did a 100% shift to all water.
Wow. That's talk about a game changer. I mean, that really means something. I mean, there you can say you take it away from truck via the congested border and you put it on water straight in. I mean, that's as environmentally sound as it can get, I would say.
It is. And also for, you know, the economy in terms of a lower cost and more reliable access to inventories, it kind of is a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. Another question. The Port of Miami, it's not a private port. Is it publicly owned, or who kind of owns it?
Right. It's a public port. We're okay. A municipal port, and we are a department of Miami-Dade County. So in the U.S., many, not all, are part of statewide port authorities.
Right.
We're a municipality. Now, of course, Miami-Dade County is so large. I think it would be a top 50 country in the world. So we report up through Miami-Dade County. We have a board of commissioners. We have a mayor, Daniela Levine Cava.
Okay.
And so we're public.
And given that you are public, it sounds to me like even you are public, which sometimes can mean slower decision making. It seems to me that your board do understand the importance of having a vital and progressive port.
Yeah, that's great. It's a balance when you're protecting the public good, and we're self-funding through okay. our fees. We don't take any general fund or taxpayer dollars, but being part of a municipality with transparency and things, perhaps things don't always move as fast as they would like, but we tend to operate more like the private sector in many respects.
So when you say like that, although you are, let's say, publicly owned, you have a high degree of service. I mean, it's not like, you are not acting like you expect to get the business anyway. So you know what I mean?
absolutely. We don't. As a matter of fact, if you look at U.S. ports.
Yeah.
Look at sizable U.S. ports. We have something that keeps us on our toes. We have a neighbor, a sister port, a friend, but a competitive friend called Port Everglades.
Ah, right. Yeah,
they are 18 miles away.
Right.
So this is not even like Savannah and Charleston,
right,
or New York and Norfolk, Virginia. They're our neighbors, so we have to stay on our toes and compete, and I think it's good for everybody.
Definitely, it's like we say, competition in modest amounts is always healthy. You know?
I think so.
Another question, one of my final questions here that I have for you, Andrew, how do you go about, marketing the Port of Miami? Of course, people know the place called Miami, but how do you go about selling your ports? Do you attend trade shows? Do you travel the world once in a while to show that you are here? in that way?
Yeah, good question. And we attack might be the wrong word, but we address that through two fronts. Yes, yeah. We do general marketing of the port and its attributes and what it can offer the marketplace. We do go to trade shows. We do go to conferences. We do a lot of, we're very strong in the details of refrigerated cargoes and perishables and customs clearance of food products. So we spend a lot of time in that arena. And that is kind of a general marketing of who we are and letting the marketplace know. But over the last couple of years, we've gone down a level to actually executing cargo programs. So that is literally working with the customers who need to import or export cargo and our stakeholders and our service providers to actually put programs together. So we will invest in the technologies. We will help the cargo yards automate their gates. We will help work on pricing. We'll put the railroad together with the ship line, with the manufacturer in the other country, and actually try to execute programs. That has better stickiness to it, but it's kind of a one door at a time. So it requires a lot of effort. And so we try to balance our resources on both of those.
Yeah, it sounds like it's well thought out, because I've seen many an efficient port around the world, which are in a way very efficient, but very quickly they get clogged up because they can't get it further from the port inland because it doesn't work with the rail, and there are two or three, four parties. They don't speak the same language, so to speak.
So me and my colleagues that have supply chain experience, it's very helpful that we understand that at the end of the day, it's door-to-door value.
Yeah.
And if you keep yourself limited only to your port, you're just one link in the chain.
Yeah.
And you kind of leave your ability to attract the market too much to the other pieces without at least being involved or engaged with them. So we do try to spread ourselves from door to door.
Okay, that's I think very wise move, and I must say I'm surprised, knowing what you just said, not only about your grand expansion here, but also I noticed that you have in excess of a million TEU or so in turnover, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So during the pandemic, like a lot of folks, as you saw, tangible spending really tick up because travel and discretionary spending went down. We reached 1.25, but we've been 1.1 million or more for the last 5 years. Okay. And we with the balanced trade lanes that I talked about earlier, yeah, while there's been a softening in the market, we have felt it a lot less. Single digits, you know, than a lot of the other regions.
Okay. Now, but it's, I must say, very impressive. I mean, you, in a way, the Port of Miami, you stand on several legs. We mentioned in the beginning, cruise, which is the biggest in the world. You have warehousing, you have on-rail facilities straight to the pier. You have a lot of infrastructure in place, and you can make it all play together. That means you are not too vulnerable. If one is down, the other one would be up, I suppose.
Absolutely. We find a really good balancing with that. We have some complementary partners. Our sister agency, Miami International Airport, is one of the largest cargo airports in the world, addition to all the passenger traffic they obviously do, because Miami's a very desirable place to either live or visit. But they're quite a large cargo airport. So we complement each other along some product lines.
Okay. So that means you could do sea air, that kind of combination.
Absolutely. And I'll give you one real example. During certain seasons, and you can think in the U.S. of like Valentine's Day, massive amounts of flowers come in that are grown in Latin America, and they have relatively short shelf lives.
Right.
Do actually tend to travel better by water. And so we will get millions of what stems, right? Like a rose is one stem. We will get millions of stems. But for kind of the Southeast region, where Miami International Airport will get tens of millions of stems to distribute throughout the rest of the country.
That's I had no idea about that. I was only thinking Miami airport is mainly passengers, but
but for example, most roses are not grown in the United States anymore.
Okay.
Colombia, Ecuador, Brazil, places like that. That's where most flowers in the U.S. come from.
So that's where the trade imbalance come from, at least mid-February or whenever it is.
At least on, February.
Okay. Very interesting, and I must say, very impressive what you have told me here during this interview. I basically have come to the end of what I could kind of think of to ask. I'm sure I have more and so on, but I want to say formally, Andrew, many, many thanks for giving me this interview.
Good. You're quite welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're very welcome, Andrew. And to all my listeners, viewers, and readers from around the world, this was yet another great interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our very special guest of honor today has been Mr. Andrew Hecker. He is the Deputy Director at the Port of Miami in Florida in the U.S. and a very knowledgeable and skillful person who certainly represents a port that has a lot of things to offer, also more than many people know. So do contact him if you need. And from me here at Project Cargo Weekly, stay tuned for more interviews in the near future. Thank you.